Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtails ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Okay, true confessions. Winter's my favorite season. I don't like heat. You can't get away from heat. But in winter, you can put on an extra sweater, an extra pair of socks if you're cold. What I love most is coming in out of the cold and being enfolded by the warmth of the house, or cuddling under a quilt to read a book and drink a cup of tea. I love the days when the snowstorms stop us in our tracks and we can do nothing but stay at home. But unfortunately, we have less and less of those days weather-wise. But I also think because we just won't give up. We head out in days that are insanely blizzardy and try to make it anyways. I love bracing against the cold. I love the feeling that I have survived when I come in after a minus 40 sojourn. I love waking up to the stark beauty of everything covered in white. And okay, I do love the fact that we get Chinooks in our part of the country too. Now, I'll admit there are some things that I don't love, such as icy streets and sidewalks that come after a warm rain and then freezing temperatures following, or having to scrape ice and snow off the car before I can drive off. Yet overall, winter is my season. And one of the things I love best about winter is knowing that underneath all the snow and cold, life is germinating, preparing to burst forth in the spring. Plants and trees sit dormant, resting and waiting, and something mysterious is going on inside of them. The gift of life is being sustained, when all we see on the outside looks dead, lifeless. Bugs burrow deep in the earth, bears crawl into the den, birds fly south, and life around us is quiet and still. But life has not ceased. It is waiting, waiting, waiting. What are the spiritual cues that we can find in the season of winter? We've talked about the spiritual cues of summer, the spiritual cues of autumn. So what do we find in the winter? In the cycle of the seasons, what do we find winter is? Well, winter is a time of rest, a time of dormancy, of fields lying fallow, a time of not being productive. Though that's much less so in our society today with all of our technological advances. We just sort of keep going and going like the Energizer Bunny. But winter can also be harsh and extreme. It can stop us, prevent us from going about daily routines. It can be demanding, snow to shovel, cars to scrape ice from. It can be lonely and depressing, with the long dark nights and the shorter days. All those aspects of winter reflect times in our emotional and spiritual lives. Well, we might like our spiritual lives to be a cycle of three seasons, spring, summer, fall, the planting, the growing, the gathering in of the promise and possibilities of our lives offered by God. The seasons don't function without winter. Crops must have a time of lying fallow. Bulbs need a time of cold weather before they can grow and blossom. Winter serves a purpose whether we like it or not. In our emotional and spiritual lives, there are winters. Sometimes we choose to have a winter, a time of rest, of stepping back and reassessing, a time of releasing what we've always done, and giving ourselves space and time to think about embracing something new. Good things can happen when we allow these fallow, still times in our lives. Great creativity can come out of a chosen time of rest and non-productivity. But there are also the winters we don't choose. The death of a loved one, the loss of a job, the diagnosis of illness, betrayal by a friend, aging, and a flood disaster. Life is going along well, full of summer promise and possibilities, and then it hits. Winter in the form of grief, loss, anxiety, fear, anger, and emptiness. We aren't expecting it. It isn't how we had life planned. But there it is, waiting like 10-foot snowdrifts that have to be shoveled before we can go anywhere. Emotional and spiritual winters interrupt our lives. They stop us in our tracks. All of our best laid plans are thrown out the winter window as we are forced to deal with the new reality, a reality in which we can feel sad and empty and alone. So what do we do with the winters of our emotional and spiritual lives, whether they're chosen or forced upon us? So I went looking to Scripture to find the wisdom it holds for us. In Exodus, we hear the instruction which is ingrained in Jewish spiritual practice. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh you shall rest, even if it's plowing season or harvest season. A regular practice of fallow, non-productive, rest-filled time. In Mark, we hear of Jesus taking a nap in the boat after a long day's work. Restful, non-productive, fallow time. Rest after work, fallow after productive time. When we rest, we allow the earth to rest. We allow people around us to rest. When we rest, our body has time to heal and refresh itself. The earth has time to heal and refresh itself. People around us have time to heal and refresh themselves. Just as winter is essential to the cycle of the seasons, so rest is essential to our health and well-being. Studies show that getting less than 7 hours consecutive sleep a night has profound detrimental effects on our health. We are meant to rest. We are meant to sleep. We are meant to have non-productive times, in spite of what your mother might have told you when you're growing up. But what about those forced winters? The times when we haven't chosen rest but are forced into non-productive time. Because of grief, depression, anxiety, disaster that we experience. For that, I found this story about Paul on the ship to Rome in the book of Acts. Now, when I went looking for a story of winter in the Bible, I wasn't sure what I would find because all of these stories are written in a place where it's a temperate climate. They're warm, and they do occasionally get snow, but it's not the reality for them. Mostly they have a rainy season rather than a snowy season. But then I found it, this story of Paul on a ship in winter, which was not a good experience in the Mediterranean. Paul has been arrested by the Roman authorities. He's to be taken to Rome along with some other prisoners. The centurion in charge, a man named Julius, has orders that leave him feeling that this is urgent. He's got to get to Rome. So they set sail. They head out to Cyprus, but the winds are against them. The storyteller declares that it is even more dangerous to sail now because it is after the fast. Did you hear that in the passage? You see, all the good sailors know that this is the wrong time of year to be heading out on the Mediterranean, at least this part of it. After the Day of Atonement, which is a time of fasting, that's what the fast refers to, no one should be heading out on the seas in this part of the world. But the Romans were the Romans and thought that they weren't bound by the forces of nature, so off they sail. Now, Paul has learned a little bit about sailing in his day and tries to give some advice to the centurion, but the centurion isn't listening. He's thinking of Caesar. and the order to deliver Paul to Rome as soon as possible. However, it's not long before the centurion realizes that he will indeed have to find a safe harbor for the winter. But he wants to be as far along that coast as possible before he pulls in, so that the springtime journey will be shorter. So he pushes the limits, and they end up in trouble. A northeaster, it says, rushes down the coast from Crete, and the ship is caught. They're bobbing around the waves. They want to try to turn that ship facing into the waves, but the winds and waves are so strong they can't even turn that ship. So instructions are given to start lightening the load, and they start throwing cargo over, anything non-essential. Still, they're in trouble. And so they start throwing the ship's tackle overboard. Now we know that they're really in trouble, right? What are you going to do if all your ropes and gear are thrown overboard? Excuse me. So they're going for survival, anything that they can do. It says that they see neither sun nor stars for many days, and all hope of our being saved was at last abandoned. That is, except for the hope in Paul's heart. He has been building that hope and saving that hope, storing it up for a long time. Here he is, a prisoner. I'm sure Paul, he's wise enough to know that it's quite likely, almost a given, that when he gets to Rome, it's going to end in execution. But that doesn't destroy his hope. He has so much stored up there from preaching the good news of Jesus. He tells the centurion that he made a bad choice, the centurion did, but Paul also offers hope and possibility to the centurion, the crew, and to his fellow prisoners. He says, "Keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that we will make it to land. I have faith in God." Now they've been drifting, tossed by the wind and waves for 2 weeks. And some of the sailors decide that maybe they'd have better odds if they get in that small boat that's used to go back and forth to land from the ship. And so, sort of pretending that they're going to drop some anchors, they try to get in the boat and sneak away. But Paul catches on and calls them back and tells the centurion, "We can only survive if we all stay together." It was an all-hands-on-deck situation, or they would all be lost at sea. Then Paul gives one more piece of advice. Eat something. He knows that everybody's been trying to make the food last, not knowing how long they would need it. But he grabs bread, gives thanks to God, breaks it, and then begins sharing it around. Does that sound familiar? That's what we do at the table here at communion. He makes sure that everyone eats their fill because, he says, we need food to survive. Then the next morning, they see land. Not sure where they are, but it's land, a beach. And it wasn't, though, a pretty landing for them. They strike a reef. The boat begins to break apart. Some swim for shore. Others float on planks and pieces of the boat. But in the end, true to Paul's word, everyone survives. Everyone makes it to shore. A winter storm, huge, everyone looking like they were going to be lost. What can we learn from Paul's experience about surviving his winter storm for the winter storms of our lives? Well, I think there's three things. The first is find a safe harbor sooner than later. Second, place yourself in a group of people who will support and help you survive. And the third thing, eat something. Nourish yourself. Physically and spiritually. We're not going to avoid the winter storms of our lives. They're going to happen. It's part of the cycle of the seasons, in nature as well as spiritually and emotionally. What we can do is know that they will come and be prepared. First, we can find a safe harbor, create a safe harbor for ourselves. I believe that it's in the springs and summers of our lives that we discover and create those safe harbors for ourselves. Where is it? Where is it that you can go that will anchor you in times of grief and loss as you're tossed about with emotions, with all the things that you're thinking about and feeling about when life doesn't feel secure? Where can you go for safe harbor? Where is it that feels totally safe? Now, it might be a favorite chair, or your sewing room, or your garden, or a forest path, or a bench in the park, or a table in a coffee shop, or evening worship. But where is it? Where is that spot that you just sit there and it holds you, it anchors you? When you need to regroup, where's your go-to spot, your safe harbor? We need to find those and prepare them and use them until it feels like that place will anchor us no matter what. And we do that in the summers and springs of our lives so they're ready for the winters of our lives. Now, the idea of safe harbor also connects with the second piece of wisdom out of Paul's story. Place yourself in a group of people who will support you. A church community can be a safe harbor. We need people around us with whom we feel so totally at ease that we can cry when we need to, we can laugh when we need to, we can express our fears, our doubts, and whatever is in our hearts, knowing that we will not be judged, we will only be loved. We need a group of people who will help keep our head above water or above the snow in winter storms. We are not meant to try to survive winters alone. We are meant to do it together. As Paul tells the sailors, we either all survive together or none of us will survive. And aren't we learning that post-flood? Paul's third piece of wisdom: eat something, nourish yourself. I don't really think that Paul is just talking about physical food, though that is essential. The fact that his actions reflect the breaking of bread in communion tell us that this is as much about spiritual nourishment as physical nourishment. When we are in grief or anxious or overwhelmed, isn't it true that we don't feel like eating? It's the last thing we want to do. We don't feel like praying. We don't feel like coming to church and sharing in communion with others. But Paul tells the sailors, and in a way tells us through that, pray anyway, eat anyway. Eat whether or not it tastes good. Pray whether or not it feels as if your prayers are going anywhere. Keep taking the nourishment in because you need it to survive. You won't last on an empty stomach, spiritually or physically. That's the wisdom of winter, the spiritual cues of the season. But there's one more piece of wisdom that is central to winter, and that's the knowledge that spring will come. Guaranteed, the season cycle, no question, winter will not last forever. Paul knows this. He says, keep up your courage. We will make it to land. But it isn't just about physical land that he's talking. This is also spiritual. Paul believes that no matter what happens to him, God is stronger. God is bigger than the worst winter storm. It's the same message that Jesus has for his disciples when their boat is being tossed about the Sea of Galilee. When woken from his nap, he commands the sea to be still. And then he says to his disciples, why are you afraid? Did you forget that you have faith to hang on to? We hang on to the faith and hope which are planted in the spring times of our emotional and spiritual lives, nurtured and grown in the summers, and gathered in with thanksgiving in the autumns of our lives. Faith and hope are what we share generously with others when we recognize that they are in the winters of their lives. Faith and hope are what we hang on to in our own winters. Even though they might start to feel pretty thin and tiny, wisps in our hands, but we keep holding on, knowing that spring will come And that even in winter, life is germinating beneath the snow, waiting for the moment when it can burst forth with all the promise and possibility which are the gifts of God in our lives. May it be so. Amen.